is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus.
Welcome, everyone, and I'm Anne-Marie Curry. I'm your presenter for today. And today's session follows on from things that we have been talking about of recent times. There was a really large-scale consultation that Auckland Council undertook, and that was on the long-term plan, and it also encouraged people to give feedback on their local board priorities. And there was, of course, discussion about the regional fuel tax in that, and I think to say it's probably the largest consultation of its type, covering five or six different issues that Auckland Council or any council's ever undertaken in this country. And the results have been analysed, that is from the Have Your Say meetings as well as from the written submissions and so on, and there seems to be overwhelming support for the fuel tax. I mean, it is really strong. It's well above the 65% mark. And if you take people who strongly agreed and people who agreed, add them together, it's nearer 80%. So it's a pretty, I'm talking in round figures here because I don't know this material has been officially released yet, but the indications are very strong that people do support it because it's a lot better than taxing people via a levy on their rates for transport. However, and it's a lot fairer because all the corporates that have cars on the road are going to be paying their share of that tax. But what is not so clear is what is the impact of this tax, particularly with the government talking about putting its tax up, its own fuel tax that it builds into the price at the pump, that it's going to put that up as well. And that's going to impact on prices right across the board. I've noticed prices in cafes are creeping up, coffees have gone up that were in the lower priced places. Food has gone up. A tart that I used to treat myself to once in a blue moon was, it used to be $4 and now it's $5. I'm just seeing, you know, substantial rises here and there, and that's even before this has actually come on. So it's going to be interesting to see what impact it really does have. And in that sense, it may be less than a good idea. So we will just have to take a rain check on this and watch the cost of living very carefully, and there may be some more lobbying needed in this space. Now, consultation is not over for this year. The Auckland Transport have a regional transport long-term plan. It's a 10-year job, and they're bringing that out, and they have only just released it this week online, and I haven't had chance to digest it yet, so I'm not going to make specific comments about it, but they're only allowing 2 weeks, so really the feedback closes on Monday next week, and I'm finding that really a short turnaround and a very difficult timing. Please send me any comments you have about this to annemarie.curry@gmail.com. Grey Power can advocate on behalf of all of its members across Auckland and indeed in the region, and we can discuss it online, different presidents, and we can make your comments part of our comments. So do comment to me via the email. Also, you don't have to be a member, but you know, it helps if you are a member to tell us that you are. You can go to your local library and you can say, look, I want to have my say on the Auckland Transport long-term plan. Can you direct me to the online part where I do it? Can you help me make a submission? Can you download the form so I can do it in handwriting and so I can post it in the library? And because that is the kind of support that is normally provided for submissions to council. And Auckland Transport is part of the council family, and certainly a big portion of our rates go to fund them. So it's very important that we have our say. Some buses in the central area, there's been a consultation and there's been a plan to introduce new services and to slightly change routes, and some of these routes are still under discussion. So in the Hillsborough area, there's some active community posts online on Facebook about people in Carlton Street and Frederick Street and so on who are concerned about the bus changes through that area. There's people concerned about the buses between Onehunga and Newlyn, whether they actually, the route is secure or not, and how that impacts on them, and people wanting to do parts of the trip, like to get to Blockhouse Bay or something like that. If you've got concerns about bus shelters, lack of provision for wet weather, having to change buses frequently but having to stand out in the rain, if you've got those sort of concerns, this is quite a good place to raise them, and also to raise them with us, because when we consulted on the last long-term plan with Auckland Transport, we had we filled a hearing room, we had five people presenting, and we did media interviews outside the room, live interviews with radio stations and so on. So, in fact, we had a protest march. That's how organised we were. I don't know whether we'll be that organised this time, but we certainly look forward to playing a full part in any hearing, and we certainly look forward to bringing to light things that are not working for people, because public transport's got a long way to go to be really good. Otherwise, people would be out of their cars with greater frequency. I mean, yes, there's been an uptake, and yes, the numbers have gone up using the trains and the buses. But at the moment, many people report they can't catch the bus because it's already full before it gets to their stop if they're travelling at peak hour. So that really isn't going to add to, it's not going to add anything if that's the situation. It's not going to take people out of their cars. So we do need to look closely at where light rail is going and how that will ease congestion, and what other incentives are needed. And it's a carrot and stick environment, and overseas congestion charges have worked. People say here we're a different sort of geography, and it will be in topography, and it will be more difficult to make it work. But it's up to the experts to find ways to do the things that we know affect human behaviour. So let's see, and let's consider, and let's think about things rather than just react. And just now I'd like to switch to an instrumental track. I'm rather fond of the cause, and that Celtic lilt is a nice way of easing into our next topic area. So we'll listen to the cause. Welcome back again. If you just joined us today, this is Senior Focus. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, your presenter, and the topics we're covering are feedback to the Auckland Council, and we're looking at some social changes and some issues that affect the ageing population. First of all, I have an announcement about a forum which is coming up on the 29th of May. And that forum is about, it's a women's forum, and it's about women and disability. But it's for the able-bodied as well as the disabled, because it's about the conditions that women experience in a number of situations. And when we do consider disability, it's everything. You may be disabled by physical challenges, but you may also have other sorts of disabilities that are affecting you to do with harassment and bullying in the workplace, sexual violence and so on. So this is a very broad forum, but the Disability Rights Commissioner, Paula Tesorio, is coming along, and she has a message for us from the United Nations, who are going to be examining our compliance with the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And that will occur next year. So it's important for people to be aware now, what is the situation in New Zealand? Are we living up to what we've signed on to with the UN? And are we really getting to grips with the changing attitudes that we need? Because it is an attitude thing that doesn't really cost money to change an attitude, but it can change lives and it can be huge. So there are women in the media who are very concerned about the need to change attitudes, and Alison Moe, the broadcaster and journalist who launched the #MeToo New Zealand sexual harassment investigation, she's going to be one of the people presenting. Dr. Huana Hickey, who's an advocate in disability law and human rights fields, she will be presenting, and Mingzu Fu from Shakti Youth, she will be talking about the Asian, African and Middle Eastern women's experiences in Aotearoa. And Jan Logie, the Parliamentary Undersecretary to the Minister of Justice, will be focusing on domestic and sexual violence issues. So all welcome. And if you want to RSVP, it's info@womens.org.nz. And I also must say that this is open to all genders, and so men are welcome to attend. And it might interest you that there are many challenges for disabled people. Only 24% are employed, compared with 74% of non-disabled. And disabled women earn on average 30,000 less than disabled men. And there are higher numbers of Māori with disabilities living on less than 15,000 a year than non-Māori. And women with disabilities are much more likely than other women to face abuse by carers and by family. So this is not peculiar to seniors. Obviously, it pertains to their experiences, but if we want to change attitudes, we have to change them across the board, and that it's sometimes easier to change things right across the board than to focus just on the experience of seniors. So I, even though it's not a senior-specific forum, I think it's a very worthwhile discussion forum to attend and to get your views known and to listen to other views. But this is 7 to 9 in the evening at Western Springs Community Garden Hall, and a suggested donation is $20, but less is also possible. So it's open to all, and there should not be any barriers to people attending. Now, this sort of leads in really to a project I've been involved in, a research project called Generations Project, and I started doing the work in January with a group of about a dozen people. So it's drawn heavily on the Active Ageing Research Centre of AUT and Dr. Valerie Wright Sinclair is one of the people from that research centre who's been involved. It's involved Age Concern, Kevin Lamb. It's involved Grey Power, obviously myself, and also wearing a hat as a social science researcher. But it's also involved people from Auckland Council who work in policy, people who represent the lesbian and gay communities who've got specific issues with ageing, and people representing Māori and from Ngāti Whātua, and people experiencing transitions at various points in their lives. So I think it's fair to say that there was a level of expertise which was exceptional, and there was a level of life experience and relevance that was also exceptional. So this research team came together independently. We didn't get funding. We were doing this as a way of finding out what we could through being participant observers in the research project and through highlighting this is an area that needs attention. This is an area that needs more funds put in to tease out better solutions, to find answers. Because it was very clear from the way we did the research and what we found out that there was a great deal of commonality in what people are facing as seniors in their transition from working life into retirement. There is a presentation on this project happening this week, and by the time this goes to air, I will have more information about what's planned for stage two and how this information is going to be released in the public arena. But I will be one of the presenters and part of the group that's discussing the research this week. And so I thought it was worthwhile sharing with you all that this really brought home to us how much focus there is on aging as a process of medicalisation. We try to keep people safe. We try to keep them living longer. And that's our basic focus in the health system. And that spills over into, I guess, communities and councils' focus. But what is underlying at the bottom of everybody's experience is the need to have a meaningful life, the need to tell their stories, the need to have their stories appreciated, the need to reduce some of the challenges that are faced by negative social conditions. And by that I mean the growing number of people who don't own their own homes moving into older age. The lack of warm, dry homes is a particular concern because about 50% of the housing stock is damp and mouldy and really unacceptable for an older person to live in, let alone anyone. So that's research that the council has done, and it's fairly common. It's also done by other agencies, so we know it's robust research. It's not just someone's generalisation. It's based on in actual investigations, and I've seen the graphic photographs taken by Auckland Council when they've done research into the damp, cold, drafty homes, exactly the standard of this accommodation, exactly what it's like and how hideous it is. And it's a very worrying situation to think that 50% of people renting are renting in these sort of conditions. And then if you think, well, a lot of these people are actually over 65. Currently, around 20% of seniors are living in rented accommodation, and it's not all managed by council, and it's not all, or Housing New Zealand, and it's not all up to standard. So that's a thing that is of real concern, but of even worse concern is, or even more concern, is the fact that the numbers of people not owning their own homes, having to rent, are rising. So that figure of 20% is heading towards 30%. And so not only are we going to have a rapidly growing ageing population where maybe 25% of all Aucklanders will be over the age of 65 by 2035. That's the projected figure. And it's likely to be even higher than that if we continue to have unchecked immigration. Not only just family reunification, but there's a lot of people in their mid-50s coming back to New Zealand thinking they will retire in New Zealand. and or they're coming back because their countries they live in overseas and have done for years, don't let them retire there. For example, in Japan, you cannot stay there as an old person unless you're Japanese by birth. So we're basically finding a situation where we've got this rapidly growing ageing population, at the same time as a significant rising number of older people are unable to afford to own accommodation. And so that's going to impact on their life and on their status of health and their life expectancy and their quality of opportunities for them to have a meaningful existence, to be able to express themselves, to be able to contribute to society. So all this research is unpacking people's lived experience and what are the issues and what are the things that are most important. And what has come out, and it's come out in other studies done in the literature, that your life expectancy is more influenced by your level of connectivity, how many people you meet in a day, interact with, how many people you regularly have meaningful contact with. That's going to dictate the quality and length of your life more than how much money you have in the bank, or where you live, or whether you have any particular status roles or paid work. So that is really exciting to know, because it's something that we can then say, well, look, what are the things that will make a difference? What are the things that we can do in the planning space? What are the things the council can do that would make a difference to people's lives? And one of the things, of course, is to have a community hub. And it's something we've been advocating for now for 2 or 3 years. And indeed, many councils around the country have been very switched on and very keen to provide for their older citizens by having such hubs set up, where there's a cafe, where there's a meeting space, where there's activity spaces, and where there's a drop-in area just to sit down and have a cuppa and look at brochures and update yourself. Because so often there are opportunities, there are things that you can access that will make your life easier, but you don't know about them. But if you've got a common one-stop place to go, you can easily find out. You can keep yourself updated, and you can get help with digital stuff if you're not online at home. So community hubs are really important. I know libraries are trying to reach in that direction, and some of them are very good at doing that. But a community hub that has some space dedicated for seniors and seniors groups, and is easily accessible, and actually recognises that seniors have unmet needs, and so it's going out. They're going out of their way to meet those needs. This sort of environment is really essential to assist people in the ageing process. So really in Auckland, we probably need ideally one in every board area. But if we had five across, or six across what were the legacy council areas, that would be a start. A really good start. And it's kind of getting that awareness across to people, why it's important, what a difference it would make. And that's why I think this research project is so exciting. And so I'm looking forward to the unveiling of the research this week with a selected group and a selected audience. And I look forward to wider debate and wider discussion about it. And it's very heartening to see that the people that we spoke to were able to talk about their processes of change that they'd gone through. One man had a stroke in his early 60s, and he said it changed his whole life because he couldn't go back to work. He was very tired and fatigued, and he had to make new friends. He had to virtually redesign his life from scratch, and it was a big challenge. But he said that the way he lived stemmed from his attitude. He could look at life as a glass half full or half empty, but he said to learn to smile at people and to encourage others to smile really was a quite a profoundly changing experience. He takes nothing for granted these days, but he's very keen on telling me how dramatically different he is making lives around him by doing the smiling exercise. And he was telling me fondly about one woman that he has persuaded over time. He's got her catching a smile from him to the point where she's almost smiling spontaneously when she arrives at the men's shed, which is known as the boomer's shed because there's both women and men attending it. And that's really quite significant to think that, you know, he's got his own little mission in life to uplift people and to improve their quality of life, and he does it a smile at a time. Another person that I interviewed was doing a gap year as someone who'd retired and found it difficult not going to work. His head was full of wondering about this project and, or, you know, he was being distracted constantly. His mind didn't quite want to settle on anything, but he couldn't go back to his work. So he just didn't quite know what to do with himself. As he described it, it's a bit like being a pioneer, and you find that you are you're having to make a journey and make decisions and so on, but nobody can really advise you. It's your journey. And I found that was a very, very interesting and thoughtful response. So keep in touch with us and do keep listening, and because you'll hear more about this in future times. I'll have other programs on it. And today I'd like to end the program on, again from The Cause, another instrumental track which builds on the first one, but I'd like to do it as a memory or in memoriam for those Grey Power members who've passed on, particularly those life members of the Federation and those that we've acknowledged on Anzac Day, and in particular Elizabeth Van Alkemaid, whose anniversary was a couple of weeks ago, and Susan Sarshall, who moved up north, who gave great service on our committee for many years. Just like to remember them with this tune and hear from you next time, or via email if you want to email me. Thank you for listening.
a quarter